Fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the Pantene, baby.
Hello and welcome to the Tech Podcast nobody asked for. Certainly not the audio routing that anybody asked for. But everybody still comes back every other week anyway and listens to it. It's called Two and a Half Bens. And I'm Phoneboy.
And I'm Phoenix.
And I'm Ryan Pimrose.
Ah, yes. Well, join us every other week on Fridays at 9 p.m. Eastern. Hopefully this time I've taken screenshots.
9:30,
yeah,
10,
9:30, 10, you know, we'll get there.
And anywhere between 8 o'clock and you finally give the fuck up because you're totally over the...
It's between 8 o'clock and when Phoneboy understands the roadcaster.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I've heard there's a video on YouTube that might help you to instructionally learn how to use this thing.
Well, it's also understanding where all the audio is going and not going.
Yeah, you've only been doing this shit for, I don't know, what, 40-ish years? You'd think by now you'd have figured it out.
Well, you'd think.
No.
No.
It is that complicated.
Apparently. Well, anyway, you can, let's see, you can send us, you can listen to us, on 2.5bens.live if you want to hear the bullshit that we go through to actually put this out. Yeah, you can go there. You can also go to 2.5bens.com if you just want to subscribe to the podcast and listen to it. And you can also send us feedback at 2.5bens.com or vocal mails at 253-237-3321. Yeah. There was a conversation with Big Loaf about the fact that our discussion about AI and how we're not like real fans of it and all of that.
Our discussion about AI, isn't that every show?
Pretty much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and of course we have more stories on AI, of course, because you can't go through the tech stories without finding AI.
Well, you can. You just have to put a little bit of actual work into it.
Well, yeah, that's true.
We don't do that, so I'm going with what Phoneboy said.
Yes. Okay, fine. There's only half a Ben I can see immediately. The fact I have a VJ, I've been outvoted. Fine.
Well, but because we're not happy with the fact that AI is doing things, and yeah, we fucked ourselves with scripts and that kind of thing. But no, if I write a script and I fuck it up, guess who's accountable? Me, right? And yeah, okay.
AI has no accountability whether it writes a script or just simply tells you to, you know, you can bend time with your mind. You can fly. Dude, if an AI is telling you can fly and you're that mentally damaged that you are, one, stupid enough to use an AI as your therapist, may I open the window for you?
Oh.
Alrighty then.
Yeah. All right with that.
And here on 2.5 Bens, we tell people to kill themselves.
Well,
you know what? Yeah. If you're dumb enough to eat a Tide Pod or drink the bleach, you get what you deserve. That this should be reserved for the Lotus Effect.
I mean, I'm not going to go so far as to tell someone they should die, but I am definitely in favor of taking some of the warning labels off of things.
The sad part being the reason those warning labels are on there is, you know, somebody done did what the fuck it's warning you against.
Coffee. What? Caution. May be hot. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. The old lady at Mickey Don Don's. Or why does a curling iron or a blow dryer have a tag on it that you shouldn't use it in the shower? There's a Bill Ingvall skit around this. Seriously, folks. Why? I don't think I've ever been taking a shower, washed my hair, and thought, you know what I need? An electrical appliance in here with all this water around.
Well, you clearly haven't lived.
I was actually more expecting the not with that attitude response.
Well, all right. Anyway, so which one of us is gonna start the AI Fap Fest?
Well, 1, 2, 3, not it.
Not it.
I actually don't have that much on AI, although I do have some juicy data center stuff later. But I just want to start by saying last week's show was way too long, and I'm getting tired of pushing 3 hours with this stuff because I'm not built for that. And so, of course, I set out when I did my research to try to bring a lot fewer stories and totally failed at it because I have 8 today.
I see.
Can I tell you that I started with 4/5 if I really wanted to kind of match you guys pace for pace. I think I have hit 8 before you even said you did. I'm going to vicariously blame you just because I can.
Well, I only have
too
6.
Many bends. All so. Right. Well, I can go ahead and start. I got some security stuff if we want to bore the everybody and
sure,
drive
why not?
Them away.
I mean, that's what we do. That's what we do here.
Or I've got some data center stuff.
Oh, dealer's choice.
Okay. Well, in that case, how about a really quick one? Windows 11 is finally getting feature parity with Windows 7 and Windows 8. Yeah, I went with neither. That's right. starting with the upcoming Insider preview, the taskbar on Windows 11 can finally be moved to the sides and top of the screen, and the buttons and icons on the taskbar will be resizable. This is configurable via the Settings app. It's looking like maybe in Windows 12 or 13, they might look into drag-and-drop technology that they had in Windows 7. That's pretty much the story. I don't even know why they took out the ability to move the taskbar from the one place that taskbar on the bottom of the screen is what everybody knows. It was only a couple of years ago that I even realized that they took out the ability because it was in Windows 8 and my taskbar was on the left side of the screen. And I thought that was normal. And I didn't even realize the vast majority of Windows users couldn't do that because they took the functionality out of Windows. Why did they do what the? And I know because I had this argument with somebody in the shell team back when working on Windows 7. I called out some bug. I'm like, if you put your taskbar on the side of the screen instead, then this happens. And they're like, yeah, but we have data that only 1.5% of users move the taskbar away from the bottom, so we're not going to fix that. Like, you motherfuckers. It's a function that works. If you're not going to fix it, just take the functionality out. And what blows me away is I think they may have actually listened to me, which would be something that the shell team in Windows never did before.
Well,
so suffice it to say, Windows 11 is finally getting feature parity with the last Windows that I bothered to use.
Well, that's it's kind of amazing. You see these little sort of UI sort of tweaks that, you know, you kind of don't think about them until you realize, oh, I can't do them anymore because you just set them up and you just use them, you know, whatever. And it's it's completely horses for courses, whether it should be down on the bottom, on the left or the right, you know, whatever. I mean, on the Mac, it's.
Well, it's what's called user choice, which is what Windows used to do before Windows 10, I guess.
Which is something that Microsoft absolutely hates. No, I was just simply going to say, you know, the fact of people, you know, users actually having an opinion or autonomy. No, it's all cookie cutter. You must obey the AI.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. You know, I kind of moved away from Windows after Windows 8 because of exactly that attitude. But it was the forced updates. It was when Microsoft said, no, you don't get to choose when you update or how far. We're just going to reboot your shit. Without, you know, it was suddenly not my computer. And I'm like, I'm off this train. And I know that a lot of people don't have a problem with automatic updates. I think people should have more of a problem, but you know, what the hell? Meanwhile, over here on KDE, I can set the taskbar and the start menu separately on any edge of the screen as full width, spanning multiple screens, half width, only a few pixels wide. I can slide it anywhere along the edge, fully customizable buttons and widgets. And I can even have, if I want, my start menu floating in the dead center of the screen and pinned there if I want on top of every window that I have. I don't have that because that would be stupid, but it's possible. What the fuck, Microsoft? That's all I want to say. Oh, and one other thing that I pulled out of the article because I thought that the line was fascinating in context of this story, is that they say when you change the setting, when you change which edge of the screen the start menu is on, there is, quote, no restart or sign out required. Well, thank God for that.
You know, this shit's just it's the inshitification of everything. Cory Doctorow was right. You know, that's all I can say.
That was the biggest puff story that I had in my list, but it just like, what the hell, Microsoft? Taking away user choice and then like, oh, it's a really big feature that we're giving back a little tiny bit of the user choice, and you don't even have to reboot to move your start menu. What the? Okay.
That is probably the lamest thing. Okay, but I think I can bring lame to the table, and it's not AI.
Okay.
Because apparently the DOJ is looking for Apple and Google to hand over data on about 100,000 users of this car app that is part of an ongoing case against a company called EasyLink. Now, if you've never heard of EasyLink, they are the maker of the Auto Agent app and a related car diagnostic tool. Now, what these do is they bypass computerized emission controls on cars, which means they're able to fake it for you so you don't fail emissions if you live in one of those shitty overgoverned states that still has emissions to get your car registered and et cetera, et cetera. And if you've never experienced this wonderful joy, you have to drive into essentially this little, you know, garage, you know, what do you friggin' state run garage looking place where they set this big hose up against your or like onto your tailpipe. And then they go and they click a bunch of buttons on a computer and it tells them how much emissions your car is emitting. And if it exceeds a threshold, well, you get one of those sucks to suck stickers put on your windshield. Come back later. More money, money, money. It is a massive money grab. Now, this EasyLink company was first sued in 2021 for allegedly manufacturing and selling a device, like I said, that bypasses these computerized emission controls. What cracks me up is that the U.S. attorney, Audrey Strauss, said emission controls on cars and trucks protect the public from harmful effects of air pollution. Right, and all your fucking centers are doing nothing. You know.
And they don't.
Right.
I mean, passenger cars and trucks are like 0.1% of all of the crap being spewed into the atmosphere. But yeah, let's go ahead and, you know, say the weather is your fault. Make everyone feel guilty for driving anywhere.
Oh, exactly. Because we have to switch all to electric cars. Remember,
I've suddenly got this image in my head of somebody pulling into one of those inspection stations in a coal-tuned diesel, spewing black smoke out, and the computer's like, yep, everything's good.
No. Do it even worse. If you're down here in the South, you got these big compensation trucks where the exhaust is routed up through the bed, and the pipe, oh, Christ, that it's a fucking stovepipe and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Just belching coal out of this thing.
Yeah, the modification that they need to make is the one where the exhaust is routed in through the heat vents in the defrost. Yeah, right into the cab.
The carbon monoxide.
You know, on the topic of what we were talking about earlier.
I totally get it. However, so here's the thing. Here's where it gets shitty, is because the DOJ wants the information on all of the people who created an account with this particular company after purchasing their product.
And that's why you shouldn't be creating accounts at places.
Well, I don't disagree with that. Okay. And here's what I find interesting is that there are people who are disagreeing with the fact. So the government says that the request for this information is fair and appropriate because the lawyers want to interview the witnesses about their use of the products. Bullshit. And they argue that when the users provided their personal info to the company and agreed to its terms and conditions, they lost a cognizable privacy interest as to that information. So basically, if you signed up for this platform because you bought this product, you forfeit your autonomy. We have the right to come in and set, you know, go up your ass and set up camp and know everything about you because you used this app and this product. And of course, EasyLink is disagreeing with this, saying, that these requests for potentially...
Because they want customers?
Well, I mean, yeah, no company is going to be like, sure, here's all the records on our customers just because the government says we have to do it. Well, I would love to say who the fuck are you, but I think we understand how all of that crap works. So these requests for potentially hundreds of thousands of people's PII goes well beyond the needs of the case, and it creates serious privacy concerns, according to the Easy Link lawyers, which I don't disagree with. I don't think, you know, they're arguing that investigating the claim doesn't require identifying each person who's used the product. Well, it does in a way that because they want to punish these people because they say that they're violating the Clean Air Act. And EasyLink also said this isn't the first time that the government tried to obtain PII on its customers. It said there was a 2019 request that they wanted a back door to the system that would allow them to monitor the unsuspecting users. And of course, the government said, no, we didn't do that. No, we didn't ask for an inappropriate backdoor. No, not us. No, we wouldn't do that. You know.
No, okay. Bullshit.
You would do it. You know, credit, you would.
Partial credit to EasyLink for at least trying to assert in court that their customers have some claim to privacy. But massive thumbs down to these dipshits for keeping the database of their users. EasyLink could have fixed this years ago by just not collecting all of this PII.
I mean, there is that.
I'm going to go ahead and reiterate what I tell everybody faced with a computerized dialogue that's asking you to provide or to insert way more information than is needed. You know, you're like, oh, I want to sign up for a forum so that I can read the, you know, look at the instruction manual for this widget I just bought. Oh, how come they want my name, my social security number, and my ancestry.com info? Like, don't put your real information in there. If they don't need it, don't put your information in there. And with all of these forms that you have to click through and it will not let you through because programmers are frankly lazy authoritarians who think that the user is just there to bend over and take whatever they give them. And so they're like, oh yeah, go ahead and insert your SSN. Yeah. Sorry. You can't see this video without put wrong information in there. If you have to just, don't put right information. Poison their goddamn databases. These people have no business creating all of these massive PII databases because, as we know, the databases will leak when the company is breached, when the government comes along, when the company is sold, whenever they find a sweetheart deal with Facebook for data brokerage. It doesn't matter. The information will leak. If you give the information to anybody, it will leak. That is,
of course,
we know this.
Absolutely. And I want to give an honorable mention really quick to a story that came across our wire, but we passed upon, although we found it hilarious, that now if you type into the Google search engine the word disregard, you get this interesting, okay, I'll wait until you have a request response from the AI. Totally breaks the system. So kudos to Microsoft
like that.
On that.
Okay, that's good. That I like it.
Well, that's Google actually. So.
I'm sorry, Google.
Yes.
But kudos to Microsoft anyway.
Well, exactly. Oh my. Okay, so, honey, I assume you're done with your story. Okay, so. Yeah. Okay, you've sent the link. All right. Awesome. So it's now my turn, and. For my first story, I think this is kind of one of those no shit Sherlock moments. 60% of MD5 password hashes are crackable in under an hour. I mean,
MD5 isn't that from like 1993?
Wait. Excuse me. I can name that password in 10 keystrokes. It's called John the Ripper, bitch. If you can get in that file, if you can fuck it up fast enough, 10 minutes, I've got your password, and I'm God.
There you go. But anyway, this is, so of course this is, but yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be using MD5, but how many people, how many of these, you
know, Shaw 512 for the win.
How many of
these? Shaw 2048. Thank you.
This is true. But then again, how many people are going that severe?
Well, Instagram used to have encryption on their stuff, but that's a different story. Hey,
I was going to say, ew.
Okay, so, all right, so I'll read what the story says. It's, so this came from World Password Day, which is probably just another, you know, it's something that, I don't know, some cybersecurity marketing person came up with and said,
yeah,
let's celebrate passwords, the thing that everybody can, you know.
Everybody hates.
Everybody hates, exactly.
That everybody writes on Post-it notes stuck to their monitor.
Yeah, which is funny because that's what the picture that is that comes with the story from El Reg, right? It actually has somebody with a sticky note that says password 123456 on it. So, you know,
actually, Klaatu says he uses MD5 for checksums for
deduping files. Yeah, that's different. That's very different use, and that makes a lot of sense.
That's not a security use.
Right.
No, it's just more of a, let me make sure I have the same file. Yeah, MD5 for that purpose is, you know, it's not meant as a security thing. It's meant as a, you know, it's a checksum, right? Which means, okay, it's the, does the file give the same results as long as it does? Okay, good.
Is that like that command that I learned, this hash, EQ, this hash?
Yeah, something a lot, yeah, well. It's
on Windows?
Yeah, that was,
I mean, there's a lot more command to that, but the two
there was some PowerShell involved with that. But right. There's lots of ways to generate hashes. He probably, knowing Klaatu, he probably typed in either MD5 or MD5 some space, whatever the file name was. Because
my favorite way to generate hashes is the potato and the cheese grater.
Yeah, that's a good, well, yeah, there's other ways we could generate hash, but that we talk about that on the Lotus Effect Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern.
No, so quick fourth wall break. We had a baked potato left over from dinner the other night, and I chunked it up and threw it in some rendered beef fat and made the most banger-ass home fries.
Yeah, those were good.
And did you send me any?
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
Hey, after we're off air, I do have to talk to you about something in that realm, though.
Yeah, we got to do that. But so anyway, this is this story, right? It's yes. Let's see. Yes.
Klaatu warns not to smoke your potato hash.
No,
folks.
Let's not smoke your potato hash. There's no better way to celebrate than with news that a majority of the supposedly secure password hashes can be cracked with a single GPU in less than an hour and some less than a minute. Using a data set of more than 231 million unique passwords sourced from dark web leaks, including 38 million added since its previous study, and hashing them with MD5, researchers at security firm Kaspersky found that using a single NVIDIA RTX 5090 graphics card, 60% of passwords could be cracked in less than an hour and a full 48% in under 60 seconds. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all, because people use really bad passwords. Those things get cracked. You know, they're in, you know, whatever the John the Ripper file, right? Now, that's not exactly a run-of-the-mill desktop graphics processor given its price, but it does highlight an important point, and it takes surprisingly little to crack the average password hash. Aspiring cyber criminals don't even really need their own 5090, Kaspersky notes, as they can easily rent one from a cloud provider and crack hashes for a few bucks. The bottom line is that passwords protected only by fast hashing algorithms such as MD5 are no longer safe if attackers obtain them in a data breach. Yeah, and it's not that they, you know, and it's the shitty vendors that you've, that, you know, that you, that, that got breached, right? That were using some sort of MD5 hashing for their passwords, you know, but of course it could have also, you know, SHA-1, anyway, all the other SHAs.
Dude, if you're using SHA-1, you're sucking worse than an MD5 and you know it.
Well, only marginally.
That's
margins still matter.
I only use ROT 13.
Are you done yet?
Okay, you have to explain ROT 13 to her, because I don't think...
No, it went over my head.
No,
and I admit
don't.
It.
I don't have to.
No, but it is...
ROT 13 is you take the alphabet A through Z, and you map A through M to N through Z, and you just, like, transpose them. So
yeah, you basically
A becomes N,
oh,
B becomes O.
Oh, my fucking God. So it's like half the alphabet slide one. It's like the original cipher.
Yes.
It kind of is.
Okay.
It's take the whole alphabet and slide it 13.
Well, okay. So
right. So it's it's a play off the original cipher, which is how encryption even became a thing back in Roman times when Caesar used it to send messaging. Wow. Fuck, I might have been paying attention during those classes.
Well, but I'll tell you another place it got used too. This is on the days of Usenet, which I'm sure Sir Bemrose is familiar with. This was kind of this either the spoiler alert or the, you know, for sensitive eyes, you know, don't read this, right? That you would actually post the text in Rot 13 so that basically that was somebody wouldn't accidentally read something that they didn't want to read. And they would encode it with Rot 13.
I had an email client that had a key that you just select text and it would Rot 13 the text that was selected.
Yeah. So
because it was used for obfuscating.
Of course.
You know, back when you didn't have like black on black font. I have another very brief note about that. There was a time period in my life when my email signature file, the only thing it said was, this post is quad Rot 13 encrypted. Reading it violates the DMCA.
Well done. Yes. Gotta love it.
Oh. Okay. I got some passwords that are even easier to crack.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. If you happen to be... If there was a government agency that you would think would really have their cybersecurity nailed down, how about CISA, CISA?
Yeah, you would think that they would. You would think CISA would have their shit together. But go on.
Well, it turns out you don't actually need to break any hashes. All you need to do is scan GitHub for open repositories that have files upon files with credentials listed in plain text.
And did we see that hackers are poisoning open source at an alarming rate? Another thing I didn't pull but thought was noteworthy today.
Wait, is that related?
In a sense, if you're using open source for anything.
Oh, well, GitHub isn't open source. GitHub is a Microsoft product by now, but. Okay, this particular story, this was found by a security firm called GitGuardian. The only thing that they really do is they have a daemon somewhere that constantly scans Git repos for exposed secrets and notifies their owners. It found a repo that contained what I'm about to describe to you. He reached out to Brian Krebs, because the owner of the repo was not responding and because the secrets were particularly sensitive. So here's some fun bits that were in there. First of all, this was clearly a CISA government contractor. The contractor was not named by Krebs in his article. And in fact, in the screenshots that Krebs posted, the name was blanked out. I'm sure it would not be difficult to figure out who did this, but I didn't care that much. The repo name, however, was private-CISA, so that's not all that well obfuscated there. Some of the contents of it: a vast number of internal CISA DHS credentials and files, including cloud keys, tokens, plain text passwords, logs, and other sensitive CISA assets. They noted that the commit logs in the offending GitHub account show that the CISA administrator disabled the default setting in GitHub that blocks users from publishing SSH keys or other secrets in public code repositories.
Oops.
GitHub has a feature that tries to prevent you, and they clearly prevented that. There were passwords, lots of passwords, stored in plain text in a CSV file, backups in Git, explicit commands to disable GitHub secrets detection feature, yada, yada. There was a file called importantawstokens.yaml, which had admin credentials to three different GovCloud servers in AWS.
GovCloud. Oh, great.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know why GovCloud is using AWS. Shouldn't they have their own? But they'd probably fuck it up. So either way, importantawstokens.yaml. Another one, AWS Workspace Firefox Passwords.csv, which had plain text usernames and passwords for dozens of internal CISA systems. Passwords and credentials in plain text for CISA's internal development and software environments, including their test bed and the private place where they investigate code before shipping, and also the internal repository for all of their internal tools. They had admin credentials in plain text. Can you say supply chain?
Yeah. Can you say Armageddon? I bet you could.
Yeah. What was noted here, the GitHub repo exhibits a pattern consistent with an individual operator using the repository as a working scratch pad or synchronization mechanism rather than a curated project repository. What I suspect happens is the CISA contractor was using this GitHub to synchronize files between a work laptop and a home computer. Now, here's the fun bits. The repo was created on November 13th. Now, anybody with access to a calendar knows that was more than 6 months ago. It's just been up on GitHub. We don't know how many times it's been downloaded, if any. The leaked AWS keys, Krebs verified, or someone did in the article, that the leaked AWS keys were still valid 48 hours after the story's publication. The agency, which is a government agency and moves at the speed of government, is, quote, aware and continues to, quote, investigate. Meanwhile, most of the credentials stored in the repo is still up, and the credentials that are stored in it are still valid. And then if I want to get a little conspiratorial, I dropped in, maybe it was an intentional leak, somebody in the government who wants the government to get hacked for a false flag. I don't know.
It sounds extremely plausible to me.
I mean, it's possible, and it's something that I think could happen. There are people that hate the current administration enough that they would want to do a false flag like this. I don't know if that's it. I don't know how likely it is. I was just throwing out the possibility, because if it actually turns out that that's the case, I want to be able to say I called it.
Well,
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that would occur in government. And it just, of course, a part of me is thinking maybe they left it as a honeypot, you know, for somebody. I mean, they could have done that, but
you know, that's also possible.
Yeah, I haven't personally. But I think that might be giving them way too much credit, honestly.
It's CISA. What does that stand for? I should have looked it up. Like cybersecurity
infrastructure. I don't know. I'm going to look at
I should know. We should have. I fucking should
all
know.
All three
this.
Of us should know this.
I'm screwed.
It's how the cybersecurity bit of the Department of Defense. And they should probably have a freaking clue when it
it's
comes to
it. It's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA.
Yeah.
So you would think it's in their fucking name, security. What the actual?
I hadn't even really thought about it being a honeypot, but you're right. That is always a possibility. But if these credentials are legit and the researcher from GitGuardian and Brian Krebs both say that they're legit, and Krebs on politics is a dumpster fire of tedious and retardation, but Krebs on security generally knows his stuff. I don't know. This is a massive, massive embarrassment. Yes, the leak clearly came from a contractor and not the government itself. But man, that's some egg on the face, especially given that they don't even have the ability to move fast enough after a story is published to take down the repo and change the credentials.
Which is one of the main reasons why we support the theory that it's a false flag or a honeypot. Truly.
My goodness. Yes, but that doesn't. I don't know. it's like, government incompetence. Water is wet. On the next Geraldo. I don't know. I could totally see this happening. The fact that, we're not going to take it down immediately, you know, showing the very I've read some of the guidance because, day job touches this shit. And I look at it and I'm going, the guidelines that they have, we're going to get you fucking owned.
Fast, too.
Yeah. oh, you know, we give them enough time to actually fucking, you know, I don't know, abuse the patch before we shut it down. Like, I mean, come on, like this. Yeah, God. Well, like they get what they get what they deserve.
Yeah, we get what they deserve is the problem.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, I'd be perfectly fine with all of this stuff crashing and burning if it weren't my money that's paying for it.
Well, details, technicalities. I mean, come on. Yeah, abuse the patch. Yeah, I need to write. Actually, I need to write that down as a potential show title. Abuse the patch.
I like it.
Yeah, I still need. I still need to get a new book. I'm literally on the last page of our.
Oh my.
Of the show title book, which started with a Lotus episode 70 or something like that.
So. Not like we don't have a plethora of notebooks in Casa Lotus.
No, we do, but anyway, so
Pixar, it didn't happen.
All right, I think it's somebody else's turn. So I'm guessing that there's not much more to that story other than bitching.
No, that was it, unless you want me to go to the next story, which is the same thing with Google, but I can wait.
actually, funny enough, I have a story here about the fact that Microsoft is starting to cancel Claude code licenses and thousands of Microsoft developers, well, they'll just use GitHub Copilot CLI instead. Which I thought was funny.
Oh, I'm sure the developers are happy about that.
Oh, absolutely overjoyed, don't you know?
Yeah.
Well, you betcha.
Yeah. Hey, we don't like you using the industry leader. Let's use our shitty Clippy substitute.
Pretty much.
It's funny because, in the internal on my day job, some people were wanting access to Claude something or other. And like, yeah, Microsoft Copilot is just, you know, garbage, you know, like.
Completely.
Yeah. But yeah. All of this, nobody should be using any of this fucking shit.
I total aside thing. Somebody very close to me was, I recently found out was part of her metrics for how well she's doing her job is now going to include how often she uses Copilot because that's what the company has decided that employees will do. And therefore, you know what she's doing? She's using it at the end of the day when all of the other tasks are finished to compose sonnets. To get her metrics up.
Okay, well, I think I'm okay. So, okay, well, when it's my turn, I've got a very, I'm moving up the next story I'm covering. I think it is very relevant to this to what you just said there. So, anyway, go on.
I'm done. I didn't have anything. I don't even know if it was my turn.
No, it was honey.
That's okay. I usually, as half a Ben, just kind of sit in the corner with my hands folded and watch the two of you have a verbal tennis match.
A verbal tendonitis match?
At your ages.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, he's younger than me. Never mind. Fuck you. It's only Phone Boy with the tendonitis over there.
Yeah. All right. So you were covering a story, though. I know that. I'm sorry we were talking to you because you're talking about canceling.
I'm not sorry I interrupted. Go on.
It's basically a FAP piece about how, you know, Microsoft's developers, like you said, are absolutely unimpressed with having to switch over to GitHub Copilot CLI. And, you know, they've always favored Claude Code, et cetera, et cetera. There's been a lot of fapping about that whole situation lately. Weren't they supposed to take it out of the... Wasn't that what CSB lost his shit over? Was they were supposed to take it out of the $5 model and we thought they did and then we got...
No, it was a $20 model.
Excuse me, $20 model. Same tool. Cool, however,
by the way, it was an M5M story though, and we were just kind of you know, we just kind of riffed on it, and somebody even corrected it in real time. It's like,
right.
Yeah, okay. The link in the show notes is literally the headline that they provide. Right, we actually do provide show notes. All the articles we talk about on this rambling thing called Two and a Half Bens. Yeah, we actually provide the links, and we use their headlines. So you know, we're not editorializing the headlines.
I found it interesting though. There's a specific part of this story that says that Microsoft is also encouraging their developers to file bug reports and feedback on Copilot CLI ahead of Claude Code being removed. Yeah, because they're trying to find a reason to talk to the upper idiots about not removing Claude Code, obviously. You know, water's wet on that one.
Yeah. By the way, there was also a story that said, you know, that basically even Microsoft themselves realizes that it's actually more expensive to use AI than to pay actual people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actual people don't want to read the verbose garbage that comes out of AI because the one thing that they're not capable of doing is being concise.
Exactly.
No, they yes. And, you know, I got real good at writing 3-sentence emails to executives. You learn how to use your words very economically and carefully when you do that. That's all I'm saying.
I just think it's interesting that they're claiming that the pressure's now on Microsoft's GitHub team to improve the Copilot CLI to try to surpass Claude Code. Like, that's going to happen. I mean, they're claiming that last year, 91% of its engineering teams were using GitHub Copilot.
To compose sonnets.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, the usage of Claude Code has had a major impact on that number over the last 6 months. And they're not happy about it. It's pushing them to improve their own AI coding tool. Why? Why is it when your own people won't use your shit? Is the only... Fuck the customers. Forget about the users. We don't care about them. You'll just keep buying our product and choking on our technological junk.
It's something called incentives and a concept called competition, which is something that Silicon Valley is really not very familiar with.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying is like, if your product sucks and you have another company that is way blowing your doors off, you would think that at the first sign of problem, you would be working on this, not when your own people are going, I'm not using that. I mean, it just, I guess because I have a brain, that doesn't make any good sense to me why you wait that long to do something about it. Of course, the same point in time, just don't use AI and problem solved. It reminds me of a conversation Phoneboy and I were having about AI taking over everything. And I said, no, because AI cannot take over everything, because truly AI can be stopped by simply pulling the plug. Just unfucking plug it. And he's like, well, what if AI had an autonomous robot with armor plating? I said, oh, baby, let's break out the tank busters and the fucking rocket launchers. And let's go Tennessee militia, baby. Mount up. Let's blow this motherfucker sky high.
Well, we had that story where we had the robots that were employing AI. It's like, yeah, don't think it's not coming. I mean,
go ask the underdog in any guerrilla war. Oh, you know, What if your opponent has all this technology? Well, then you find their weakness and exploit it.
Duh.
And exactly. Hit and run tactics. And I mean, yeah.
Yes. So, okay. Speaking of AI taking over everything, and this is actually related to the story that y'all were talking about, right? So Amazon employees are token maxing due to pressure to use AI tools. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So... I'm going to put this. So Amazon employees are using an internal AI tool to automate non-essential tasks in a bid to show managers they are using the technology more frequently. The Seattle-based group has started to widely deploy its in-house MeshClaw product in recent weeks, allowing employees to create AI agents that can connect to workplace software and carry out tasks on a user's behalf, according to 3 people familiar with the matter.
As an aside, I don't think it's a Seattle-based company anymore. I think that the communist mayor of Seattle actually drove them out. They've moved most of their headquarters to Bellevue across the way.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And Klaatu points out that they got unlimited free tokens.
Well, this is true. Yeah. So some employees said colleagues were using the software to automate additional unnecessary AI activity to increase their consumption of tokens, units of data processed by models. They said that the move reflected pressure to adapt the technology or to adopt the technology after Amazon introduced targets for more than 80% of developers to use AI each week. And earlier this year began tracking AI token consumption on internal leaderboards. There's just so much pressure to use these tools, one Amazon employee told the FT. Some people are just using MeshClaw to maximize their token usage. Amazon has told employees that the AI token statistics would not be used in performance evaluations, but several staff members said they believed managers were monitoring the data. If they can do it, they will do it. Yeah, managers are looking at it, said another current employee. When they track usage, it creates perverse incentives, and some people are very competitive about it.
Yeah, it's any job where people will work to the metrics. If you judge somebody based on a metric, people will work to optimize the metric. And that, if that metric doesn't align with what you actually want, like, oh, I don't know, building useful products, then that's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's actually...
And,
yeah,
and by the way, it's not just people. AI does the same thing. If you fuck up your metric and you measure the wrong thing, the AI will optimize for whatever you measured.
Well, exactly. And that's and it's just ridiculous. And I'm sitting here thinking of this and I'm going, because I... Because I'm kind of starting to, in my own day job. I mean, I attended some meetings recently, and they made jokes internally about how much they were saying AI in the sessions. You know, these are you know, all hands type calls, right? Where you hear the executives, you know, talk about whatever, you know, and I'm just sitting here kind of going, you know, it's like, okay, and you know, it's like everybody is saying, and or, you know, lead the conversation with AI. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, no, I don't know. That's not right.
Wait, did you say lead?
Yes, I said lead. Yeah, we're talking about sales conversations.
Because if there's a conversation with AI, I'm willing to leave that conversation.
Yes.
That was what I heard you say.
Well, that's what I would do. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thought process. And so as somebody...
Oh, Ned, you have no idea, my man. Balls deep, my dude.
Oh, yeah, trust me. There is, yeah, the products that have been in that, yeah, there, yeah. Anyway, like, I'm not even...
Well aware of that and not bringing it to a tech podcast.
Yes. But the long and the short of it is, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in my own stuff. I'm kind of seeing some of this stuff and it is, you know, as somebody who, yeah, when asked the question of what can X company do to ask me to convince me to use more AI, my answer was nothing, because that's how I feel about it. If you want the result of AI, you don't need me. Because I ain't a fucking AI and I'm not about to fucking... train in AI. We had this in a local grocery store. In fact, we had there was a. I'll post a picture of this sign in the show notes here, or I'll post it, I'll post it here from.
I want to point out right quick as he's posting this photo that we have been hella against self checkouts since the beginning, because we view them as taking people's jobs. And I would encourage anyone to show me evidence that they are not taking someone else's job. And I know, oh, well, there's a human being monitoring them. Yeah, one fucking person for 6, 8, 10 of these machines that at pretty much any given time, 4 to 6 of them are blinking because that human needs to go over and do something like check an ID to make sure they're old enough, or scan a coupon, or like not scan it, but like input it manually. You're literally wasting more time. And oh, by the way, you're an uncompensated employee of that corporation. You've heard me talk about it before.
Yeah. I don't use the self-checkout because I don't work there.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you force me to use it, then I am going to call upon my every bit of my total lack of training, and I will probably fuck it up in the customer's benefit.
Yeah, there might be things that don't get scanned, or, you know, the wrong quantities. I mean, there's many things that could happen. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but basically you didn't train me on how to use this, so I can't use it. You want to scan my stuff for me? Yeah, I'm not. I won't. I've been very vocal about the fact I refuse to go to a self-checkout because I refuse to be an uncompensated employee of this corporation. I say it loud and proud every time we go to the grocery store.
Yeah, well, I made a big deal of saying it to an employee. Like, yeah, that I will never use a self-checkout because there's AI.
All right, is that the end of that story
Boomer Radio? That is the end of that story, yes. So it is somebody else's turn. I think it's probably yours, Sir Bemrose.
Ah, next up on Boomer Radio...
Remember, you are one of us, sir.
I'm not nearly as old as you geezers.
You don't even have a year under me, sir.
Yeah, which is not as old.
Semantics. Details.
I was not around for the last, or for the 200th anniversary of our great country.
You only missed it by a shade.
Yeah, a few months.
But aren't you supposed to be talking tech?
No. No, that's a bad idea.
What time?
How about Google publishes unpatched Chromium exploit code?
Oh, I like it.
That was a kind of a fun one.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, and it's not entirely clear whether they did this accidentally or not. There was just mysteriously a proof of concept published to the Chromium Bug Tracker and then removed a few hours later. The post contained exploit code for a vulnerability in Chrome browser's Fetch API, which is an API designed for long videos or very large files to be downloaded in the background. The proof of concept opens a worker thread that remains persistent for as long as your browser is running, doing whatever it is that the JavaScript that was created when downloading wanted it to. The only user indication is the download UI briefly glitches out. They said that it might pop up a blank menu in the download page, which when I see modern apps do stuff like that, because modern apps are so fucking buggy, I look at it and be like, okay, somebody screwed up when coding this. I don't necessarily think, oh, I've been hacked, but that's the only indication. This bug, by the way, was reported to Google privately in late 2022. It is still unpatched 29 months later. The way that the proof of concept works is that any website that has the specially crafted JavaScript code, pretty much it opens up this worker thread that remains running and does whatever it is that particular site wants it to. And by the way, one of the immediate features in the proof of concept was a timer that goes ahead and revisits the hacked site to pick up any automatic updates, because even malware has forced updates these days.
Well, yes, even malware. Yes, I mean, that's just the way it is. You auto update. Yes, run the code. Yeah, trust the code. It's good. It's good. It's safe and effective.
It is not, by Google at least, it is not considered a remote code exploit because it's limited to what Chrome can do. However, that's a lot. All you need to do is pair it with anything that lets JavaScript break out of the sandbox, which one of those comes up at least once a year. The quote was, the recommendation was, users of Chromium browsers should be suspicious of download dropdowns that appear for no reason.
I
agree, but that looks identical to a UI bug that the dev probably doesn't want to bother with. Should users be suspicious of all UI bugs now? Any Chrome-based browser, you hit a malicious website or a website that's been hacked or a website that's still taking, that somebody bought an add-on that's still taking JavaScript, because I learned recently there are still ads out there where site owners just simply, as a function of creating an ad space on their site, let the ad server run whatever JavaScript they want, just arbitrary script. Oh my God.
Yeah, nothing possibly could go wrong with that.
So yeah, you just take out an ad on all the big sites and put your custom JavaScript in there, and look, instant botnet.
How about you run JavaScript in my left nut?
Yeah, so, that was exciting to learn about. And like I said, Google removed the post within a few hours, but of course, it having been posted, nothing is ever deleted on the internet. It's available in the archive sites, and you can be damn sure that the proof of concept is already hitting the dark web, and people are probably throwing AI at it saying, hey, Claude Code, can you turn this into a worm for me?
Oh, yeah, most assuredly.
Yeah, well, yeah, and of course, is it like the DVD decryption key? You can print it on a T-shirt?
I don't know. I didn't look at the exploit on it. So.
Okay, well, only us boomers will get that joke.
I did like that one, yeah. And we could even explain it to the younger people in the audience, but we ain't gonna.
Well, we probably should, because...
Okay.
Just what, it,
the okay. Then in that case, the acronym you're looking for is CSS.
Not to be confused with
not cascading style sheets.
No, Exactly. But the basic idea is that, yeah, somebody reverse engineered the decryption key for DVDs, right? Because, of course, the industry just loves to try and make digital content only readable under certain circumstances when, you know, at some point the content has to be consumed by the end user. So there's really not a goddamn thing you can do to prevent them from doing so. And if anything, all of your attempts to do so are going to impact the end user experience. Not that they give a fuck, but that's, you know, anyway, sorry.
Blu-ray, they hadn't actually baked forced updates into the DVD spec, which meant that they spent a lot of time designing this very powerful encryption scheme. And the moment one person broke it and published the decryption key, it was all over for the entire DVD format.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, and I don't think they did any better, you know, it's like they don't do any better with things like, I don't know, the HDCP for HDMI. All of this stuff just drives grumpy old Bens like us ape shit.
Okay, so I think this might sort of be related. Yes, okay, once upon a time I had a Keurig, and I don't know, Phoneboy, if you're...
Oh, coffee DRM.
I know, but... I don't know white privilege over there. Because I know you had a Keurig because your ex was a lazy cunt and didn't know how to make coffee.
I had a Keurig right up until they implemented the DRM, and then I was like, you know, this Mr. Coffee seems to be working fine for me.
Really good. On-off, you know, on-off switch, real simple. So yeah. The TLDR on this is if you tried to use a non-Keurig cup, this thing would not function. It would give you an error message on the screen. So the wonderful hack was much simpler than reverse engineering. You simply just cut the lid off of one of the actual Keurigs and then placed it over the generic cup, pressed, you know, make sure it stays in place, press down, bingo, bango, you have a screen and you can brew your cock coffee.
Yeah, there was even like... I don't remember if it was Costco or where, but I remember getting like 30 packs of knockoff third-party cups that would come with a little clip that you could put inside your Keurig, and once you put that clip on, it faked out the DRM forever.
I think I heard.
Yeah, I messed around.
I have
with
one of those
like
somewhere.
That. But
that
I also
is so cool.
Yeah, but what I also did was I got the refillable K cups, and so and they did whatever, you know.
Oh no! Unless you bought that son of a bitch from Keurig itself. Oh no, the generic ones machine did not like it half the time.
Well, no, but the ones that I bought actually had the DRM thing built onto it, so it was okay.
Well, somebody has white privilege, doesn't he? Some of us had to shop at Walmart.
Anyway, the whole...
Nah, go ahead. Say it! Just kidding.
Why would you do that? Anyway.
Okay,
it's like spending an entire day at Bucky's.
I couldn't do that either.
Let's not do that. No.
So, in all seriousness, however, I also used to work at Green Mountain Coffee. So I kind of know how the sausage is made. I used to make those K-cups. I used to feed the cups into the machine, feed the filter paper that goes into the little cups, tape up the boxes full of these fucking things. I mean, yeah, this is how I know that coffee dust is flammable.
Ooh. Film at 11.
Yeah, video.
Well, I'm sure we could find it, but let's not have it be us.
No, I've just... it's funny because the conversation had started between Phoneboy and I about... when we actually open a brick and mortar of our cafe, he's like, we could roast our own coffee. And I just shot him a look. I'm like, no, you don't understand how dangerous that proposition can be because coffee dust, it will cause an explosion. They teach you that. That's why it's an anti-static room where the big coffee bags go into the roaster. And yeah, bad things can happen. They go boom.
Somewhat related, ask Bemlet sometime about learning the physics lesson about fuel air bombs using flour and why he spent 4 months without eyebrows.
Oh, boy.
It's funny because Net just was talking about, like, flour.
Yeah, so probably...
You know what else? Okay, so for all of you who aren't aware of this, but as a person who's been to bartending school, cinnamon is flammable.
Probably for the same reason, because it's so fine.
Well, here's the other thing. Did you understand that cinnamon is actually the bark of a tree?
Yeah, it's a finely ground carbohydrate, so yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. So, oh my. So, honey, I think you are up next, unless there was, you had something else to say about this this Chromium exploit that Google's just sort
you know
of left
I
in.
I fucking hate Google and Chrome, so I'm not saying anything other than haha.
Yeah, but I think that story. But I think he's done with that story. So I think
yeah, I think well, three of the five browsers I have installed are Chromium. So I sat there and went, oh, I wonder if I should turn off JavaScript.
Yeah,
you don't run it to begin with, so I think you were good.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, all right. Speaking of not having anything to do with it, a social media site with 1.3 billion users decided that it was going to send a big old harsh layoff message to a bunch of them. What reasons? Of course, you know, AI related.
Yeah, what they say is AI. What they really are thinking is we need to get rid of all this dead weight.
Pretty much. So I'm sure it's not of any surprise to anyone, but LinkedIn, the company that built its business around helping people find jobs, grow their careers, and connect with employers.
Instead, it's now just the latest, it's Facebook 2.0.
Yep, we've just decided that AI is the new big buzz, and we're just
going to
give
The AI that's going to take over LinkedIn is Copilot. Just let's keep that in mind.
You're not wrong. Well, of course, the reason for this is cited as, you know, reduction in cost, being able to move faster and rethink how it operates in an increasingly AI-driven tech industry. Translation, we want to hire bots that don't take vacations, that don't need coffee breaks, that don't cost near as much as what it costs to employ someone, insure someone, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, that's the very point, nice bullshit, Rick.
It's massive bullshit. And these cuts came right after Microsoft reported strong quarterly results and LinkedIn posted double-digit revenue growth. So we here think this is just a big steaming pile of bullshit because you're showing growth and yet you're cutting all of your human work, a chunk, I won't say all, of your human workforce. 5%, actually. That's pretty significant, in my opinion. And basically, it's affecting employees across the global business organization, marketing, engineering, and product teams. Again, AI, 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 AI. Everything to go with, I can replace you with a machine. All it costs me is tokens. So the actual number of people that this would affect representing that 5% is about 875 workers. That is a lot. A lot, lot, lot. Now, granted, it's not just one single officer department. This is sweeping from Europe to APAC to Africa. Nobody is immune to the axe. It's gross. I absolutely, first of all, I never will use LinkedIn. I don't care how bad I want a tech job. I'd rather swallow broken glass and then shit razor blades. For many reasons, not the least of which is
you have used the site.
Clearly.
That's kind of what it's like.
From what I've heard from Phoneboy,
by the way, I made the mistake of using it in 2014.
Well,
I'm still
clearly
getting
bad
spam
in 2014.
From them.
But yeah, you still get spam from them, like you're a current user.
I don't think I've logged in 5 years. I still get spam.
Well,
constantly.
Just for context, in case anyone's wondering, the annual revenue for LinkedIn is about $450 million. Just let that sink in for a second. That's a 12% increase year after
doing
year.
What? They don't charge people to post jobs that
say in the article, okay?
That can't be just ads.
That's what I'm trying to say, actually, is they sell on the professional side. They sell paid subscriptions. I had one at one point. So, yeah, Depends. They've got like, you know, I don't know. And you know, companies have, they buy, you know, they actually buy like subscriptions for their employees and stuff like that. So yeah, there's actual enterprise sales that go on with LinkedIn.
I guess that's a nice racket. I mean,
no shit, but
this,
yeah.
This is Leering Center level of.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but wait a minute. I'm sure the two of you gentlemen are aware that LinkedIn has, I mean, yes, I talk about the AI, but there's actually more specifics behind the fact that that's exactly who's choosing who gets notified about jobs. And there's no human anymore to this. It's all computer. And it's very much able to be seen. I've seen stories about the fact of how it's cherry picking, kind of like how it uses the same adjectives and stuff like that, how you know AI wrote something. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of doing that same loop with choosing employees. And it's what I don't understand is how these companies aren't seeing this. Okay.
That would require them to look. Well,
yeah. I mean, I guess so, that's exactly what it is.
So I have a working hypothesis about the AI layoffs. You know, all these companies coming out, like, I'm so skeptical. On the one hand, CEOs are incredibly susceptible to viral fads, and AI is the biggest one that I think I've ever seen. But on the other hand, every CEO in Silicon Valley cannot possibly simultaneously be this fucking retarded.
Yes, they can, Ryan. Yes, they can.
Well, I'm just telling you that, like, it might be possible, but on the assumption that they're not all simultaneously this completely stupid, that they genuinely think that these glorified chatbots can somehow replace human employees, then what the hell are they doing? And my working hypothesis at this point is you're getting rid. Obviously, to me, they're using AI as cover to ditch employees they don't want. But why they want them? Well, remember that the last 12, 15 years in Silicon Valley has been extremely woke. And they have been DEI hiring for a decade and a half. And maybe they're using AI as cover to be like, all of this dead weight that we hired because somebody said it was a protected class, we can't get rid of them because they're a protected class unless we just say, oh, sorry, we're getting rid of everybody because AI can take your job.
So,
and I know damn well that AI can't take the job of a normal human, but a DEI hire doesn't contribute anything. So AI can totally replace that.
Basically, what you're saying is you think that there's that many die hires that
I know at Microsoft there are.
Yeah, and I can say probably I'm jiving with this theory. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna poo-poo on that theory. I'm just pulling a few numbers out, and I think actually what Sir Bemrose just said is extremely, you know, rational, because if you look at the numbers, like Meta is set to cut 8,000 they just cut as of the 20th of May. They just cut 8,000 jobs, okay, citing that they're paving the way for increased AI spending. Cloudflare said that it's going to reduce its headcount by 20% because they want to become an AI-first company. So pay attention, people. These are companies you want to get the fuck away from fast, hard, quick, and in a hurry. Yeah. I know it's hard to do, especially with shit like Cloudflare. Ticketmaster. Nobody's surprised the Ticketmaster decided to cut 350 workers amid an AI shift. No, not at all.
They have workers? There's anybody there that does anything?
Oh my God. At this point, probably fucking not. Realize they cut 350 workers. That was probably 75% of their staff.
Could be. I mean, there are probably companies out there where the CEO genuinely thinks, oh, I'm buying into all the hype about AI, therefore I can get rid of people and replace it with this autocorrect. And And those are the companies that are going to crash and burn, but it cannot possibly be all of them. I don't think that's possible. So what the hell are they doing? And I could totally see this as its cover for jettisoning all of the dead weight that they've been collecting, because every single person that comes with a sob story and a handicap placard gets hired automatically, regardless of qualifications, for the last 10 years. And they're not doing anything. The CEO has got to look at their company and be like, okay, so here's an entire department of 30 people that's not actually produced anything of value to the company in 6 years. But we can't get rid of them because there's three black people and a handicap and a trans and a couple other minorities there. Oh, I know. We'll just say that AI is taking over.
But okay, so if I may throw a monkey wrench into your theory for just a moment, what happens on the second and third round of these layoffs, because they're increasingly spending on these tokens to run this AI with the same performance you would expect, that being absolute abject garbage?
Well, obviously you build more data centers.
Oh my God. Side note and spoiler, we actually have a story tomorrow, phone boy? Yes. Lotus Effect at 5.
Well, I was planning
Eastern
on bringing that story today, ruining it for you.
No. This is a local one, Sir Bemrose.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we actually have a local story related to solar farms, data centers, bullshit.
Oh, that's actually right. I might have to go. That,
yeah, you're gonna dig that.
I gotta dig that up because it was
our local rag.
Yeah, that's right.
Had some press about it on the front page.
That's right.
So that'll be tomorrow. Lotus Effect 5 Eastern for all the fun. But yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna say I disagree with your theory, Sir Bemrose. I think there is probably some definite weight to
I think it could use
that.
Some work.
But, yeah,
but always. It sounds plausible.
Hey, you know what? Excuse me while I adjust my tinfoil hat. You know what I'm saying?
Marginally plausible bullshit is what we sell on this show.
Yeah, exactly. But I do. Okay,
we got marginal bullshit. We got silly bullshit. Sorry, a little Cheech Marin from Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes. I don't know. Cross that with lolly. Get your adverbs here anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here's, okay, so this is, I have mixed feelings about this particular story. It involves AI. A Bitcoin trader recovers $400,000 using Claude AI after getting stoned and losing his wallet password 11 years ago. The bot tried 3.5 trillion passwords before decrypting an old wallet backup. Now, this story,
wait, because I just have to scream. Are you shitting me? Wow, that's a really great thing to say. Hey, hackers, want to know how to steal a fuck ton of Bitcoin? That's what I hear when you read that.
Well,
here's what I hear. He spent 50 megawatts of power using AI to do something that a fucking for loop can do.
On top of which, however much was spent to mine that crypto.
Oh, okay, it gets even better, though. So I didn't include most of the story, but basically... So he actually had a computer. So he still had, I guess, the computer that all of this data was on at one point anyway. And he apparently dumped all of that data into Claude, which I'm not sure how he did that, but okay.
That's a terrible idea.
I was going to say, I'm not sure I would want to dump all that data just willy-nilly into Claude.
So what you're saying is Anthropic now has all his Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, so this is when the AI discovered that an older backup file of the wallet from December 2019 hidden in the guy's data. Claude also discovered an issue where the shared key and passwords that the BTC recover was trying weren't combined properly. So with the bug ironed out and an older wallet predating the password change, I guess, Claude successfully ran BTC recover and was able to decrypt the private keys, allowing the guy to get his lost Bitcoin back. So... It became a positive thing, but ultimately this guy had his old computer and just basically, I guess AI helped him or something. But it sounded like AI cracked it, and I'm not exactly sure AI did that in this case. But
I'd be afraid.
It sounded like AI sifted through the hard drive that he probably should have sorted a long time ago.
Well, yes, of course.
Like Like, oh, we just spent, you know, 100,000 tokens using AI to find a backup folder on my hard drive.
Yeah.
Well, shit, I can use the find program for that.
Duh. But, well, it's just a complete waste. I mean, yeah, it's like you said, it's like how many tokens did this use and how much did this, you know, to help some, also that some guy can get, well, you know, okay, 5 bitcoins about $400,000. I didn't check the market price before I read the,
I actually am live checking the market price right now. As we speak, it's actually down.
Oh, you care way more than I do about this.
I can neither confirm nor deny I might actually hold some Bitcoin still. It's actually down 2.77% today. It looks like right now its current value is about 75.5, meaning 75,000. Okay. Yeah, it's down like a motherfucker. This thing's been tanking worse than the Titanic.
Oh, I see. Okay, I didn't really have anything else to say about that story. I guess it's nice that the AI helped him or whatever, but like, yeah, whatever.
I saw that story. I didn't dig into it, but I also have to agree with our wonderful co-host that, yeah, why would you want to dump all your information into it? Because now it has it too.
That's true.
Yeah, and it's probably going to go ahead and give it to, you know, the next person who prompts for, hey, I need some Bitcoin. Do you have any? And he'll be like, yeah, sure. Here's the 12 words for this wallet that we recently found.
Oh, my God. I agree 100%. Ding, ding.
That'd be hilarious.
Exactly. All right. So anyway, next story, please.
All right. I'm going to do a 2-for-1. I'm going to double team you right now. Two different stories. One of them is has to do with 49,000 Lake Tahoe residents who are, as of yet, looking like not having any electricity service a year from now. So these are the people in Tahoe City, California, and surrounding area. It is the California side of Lake Tahoe. There are no power lines joining that area to the rest of California because it's extremely rugged mountainous terrain. There are, however, a whole lot of power lines connecting that area, not surprisingly, to the Nevada power grid, the northern Nevada around Reno, Carson City, etc. That's where they get their power. Those 49,000, the California side, are served by a small energy co-op called Liberty Utilities that has, for as long as it's been around, been making deals with Nevada Energy in order to get some power piped in to the west side of Lake Tahoe. Well, Nevada Energy has received, you know, when it comes up time to renew the deals, Nevada Energy has received a better offer from a data center. At this point, Nevada Energy and Liberty Utilities do not have a deal reached because Nevada Energy is talking about, well, we've got this amount of power and we need to give it to somebody. And the data center wants to give more than the Liberty Utilities people, the residents of Western Lake Tahoe. Now, here's the interesting bit. Liberty Utilities is subject to California's energy rules, which actually makes them unable to compete in Nevada's wholesale energy market. They are not legally allowed, no matter how much they want to raise rates on their own residents, which they probably don't want to. But even if they did want to jack up rates on their own residents, they are not legally allowed by Sacramento to compete in Nevada's wholesale market in any way that would get them this power over the northern Nevada data centers. This, by the way, that regulatory market from Sacramento and the fact that California utilities can't compete in any kind of wholesale market because of the regulation happens to be the same reason why so many data centers are moving into Nevada and out of California. But There's no upside to this story. You've got a whole bunch of people that when the contract runs out sometime early 2027, they have no idea where they're going to get their power from. They're actually talking about trying to get together and join with a couple of the California utilities to run a high tension wire to the west across California to see if that would help. And it's looking like that's going to take at least 3 years. So, yeah, if you live on the west side of Lake Tahoe, invest in candles.
So there's basically nothing that can be done ultimately.
Well, what could be done would be federal regulation to come in and tell Nevada Energy, you need to provide power to this co-op at a loss. But that or somebody with Nevada Energy suddenly deciding to throw economics out and just, you know, for the shits and giggles, give it to the people more expensive. That's all that can happen. I think that's likely to happen because if this story keeps going, then it's going to get a whole lot of press, and then you're going to have, you know, the kind of appeals to emotion that usually cause politicians to freak out about things, especially in an election year. So they might get something, but strict economics, I mean, the Nevada folks have no financial incentive to care about Liberty Utilities.
Right.
Because they can't compete.
That's insane. I just don't understand how legally, I mean, I get it. Federally is where it needs to be addressed, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, maybe. And here's some stats I pulled out of the story just because I like throwing them out there. In 2024, data centers used up 22% of the state of Nevada's electricity. By 2030, they're expecting that to be over 30%.
That's nuts.
Well,
by the way, that means that the data centers in Nevada are using almost as much as the city of Las Vegas.
Jesus, Harry Christ.
Yeah, we know Las Vegas is using a lot of fucking
And Las
power.
Vegas uses yeah, quite a lot of electricity. And of course, all of the new infrastructure to get power to these data centers is, of course, being paid by Nevada ratepayers. This is
Of course. Yeah,
so the data centers moving in and screwing the Lake Tahoe residents, that's yet another way that AI is replacing humans.
Wait, let me find my shock face.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to drop another one on you. This one has to do with a data center in Utah. The area is Hansel Valley, Utah, which is at the north end of the Great Salt Lake. It is a valley between two mountain ranges. It's maybe 15 miles wide. But the sides of the valley and the head of the valley are all mountain ranges, and the south end of the valley is the Great Salt Lake. It is a high elevation desert bowl. There is a proposed data center that is going to go into that valley. It is just proposed. I don't know if it's going to happen, but there was a professor, Robert Davies, a physics professor at Utah State, who decided to do the math, and the math is kind of scary. So according to the proposal, this data center in Hansel Valley is going to use 9 gigawatts of electricity.
Yeah, which is
for comparison.
Yeah, I think it's more than the entire state of Utah or something like that.
For comparison, it is more than twice the entire state of Utah. All of Utah uses a little bit over 4 gigawatts.
I thought
just let that sink in, folks. That's frightening.
So obviously they can't just tap the power grid in Utah, even with ratepayers having to foot infrastructure upgrades. There's just not that much power there. So most of the electricity at this proposed data center will be generated on site by natural gas generators. Those natural gas generators are not only going to produce 9 gigawatts worth of waste heat, because that's what happens when you create electricity and use it on site, but they're also going to produce 7 to 8 gigawatts of waste heat simply because you're spewing hot gas into the air from natural gas.
Which also comes with chemicals.
That means that you are adding a thermal load of 16 gigawatts to this little valley.
That's not going to cause global warming at all.
Well, according to Robert Davies, that is equivalent to approximately 23 atom bombs set off a day. One Hiroshima in this valley every hour, dumped into the local environment. This, by the way, is different from most electricity usage, because most electricity usage is very spread out between where it's generated, where it's used, across an entire city. This is all happening right in this valley, 16 extra gigawatts of thermal load. He put it another way, which I found kind of fascinating. The data center is huge, by the way. It will have the footprint of 2,000 Walmart supercenters.
Ew.
However, it will have the energy usage of 40,000 Walmart supercenters. So,
but go AI, rah, rah.
Yeah. So what it's going to be is, if you go to this valley, build 2,000 Walmart supercenters all packed next to each other, and then stack them 20 supercenters deep and power them all up. That's what this thing is doing. What happens if you deposit that much energy continuously into a topography like this, right at the north end of the Great Salt Lake, a watershed that is in collapse in a high desert environment in a valley? He says it would spike the local temperatures by 5 degrees in the day and 28 degrees in the valley. That is the difference between the semi-arid northern Utah desert and the Sahara.
Yeah, so imagine the Sahara and then add an ass load of humidity.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, sounds fantastic. I've been to Utah more times than I can count. And
I'm sorry.
So was I. I mean, it's kind of boring. Although the salt flats are kind of cool, but
I, as far as I'm concerned, the Wasatch Front is absolutely beautiful and amazing.
I can probably find something good about every state. City. But I also can find nothing good about anywhere these AI data centers are just absolutely engorging and sucking up every natural resource. And yet people are like, I need my ChatGPT. Right. When you're a dehydrated skeleton, let me know how that's working out. Let me know how you're pressing the keys for that ChatGPT.
None of this is good.
Now, just to be clear, this is not a data center that is being built. It's certainly not a data center that has received any kind of regulatory approval. It is merely proposed. But this physics professor just decided, you know what? People need to know what this is actually proposing.
Yeah, and the problem is that the farce that they're selling people, because this data is going to be seen by people, and people are going to show up to city council meetings and government meetings and whatnots, and they're going to all be like, no, keep this out of our thing. We don't want this impact. And they're going to be like, yeah, yeah, cool story, bro. And they're going to do what they want to do, because that's what they do.
I mean, you don't propose to build one of these things without putting a budget line item for paying off your city council members.
Oh, yeah. Palms were greased. Oh. You know, blind eyes were turned.
Oh, yeah. And like that data center story for there's actually like a fee involved. Which
Yeah. Tomorrow. Right. We don't want to blow our load too soon. But I'm telling you, Sir Bemrose, hearing this story, our local story, is just going to strengthen your particular story that you've brought tonight.
I don't doubt that.
So have you finished your stories on that?
Yeah, that's what I have on data centers.
Okay. Well, I will then talk about how Google is quietly cutting free storage to 5 gigabytes unless you want to give up your phone number. Because if you want to unlock the full 15, that's what you're going to have to do. Now, for years, of course, they've been giving you 15 gigs of online storage for free. But that seems to be coming to an end, of course, because you're only going to get 5 going forward, unless if you want that 15, yeah, you're going to have to give Google your phone number. And that's your Google account, meaning it affects your Gmail, your Google Drive, and your photos. And so anyone signing up for a new account has to provide that number during registration to get the free 15. Anyone who doesn't, yeah, they're only getting that 5 gigs. And as we know, 5 gigabytes is virtually nothing. Truly. I could fill up 5 gigabytes just in cat pictures of Sir Lucifer. Seriously. Now, you might be wondering, why does Google need your phone number?
Well, why does Google need my phone number?
Because they want to verify your account. And here's what cracks me up is, once you're verified, you're no longer an anonymous user, and thus you are privileged enough to have your 15 gigs of storage. Isn't that lovely? Selling your PII for 15 gigs of storage. Sounds just like what I
can think of cheaper ways to get more storage.
So can I. And they damn sure don't involve entering my phone number, I'm sure.
Like deleting all those backups that have 6 Bitcoin in them.
Well, now here's an interesting, what we like to call in Casa Lotus an Israeli workaround. So because this phone number verification can be done later, you can sign up without your phone number and then go to your account at a later time and bump up your cloud storage capacity from 5 to 15 without giving up your phone number. Now you also, this is interesting, you can, if you don't want to give up your phone number, pay a Google One for a Google One plan. Oh, starting at just a modest $19.99 a year for 100 gigs. And that goes all the way up to $100 a year for 2 terabytes with first year discounts available. Aren't we excited about this?
I have another question because the numbers aren't working for me. In exchange for selling your data, we know will inevitably end up on the dark web because breaches happen.
Yeah, because reality.
What do you get again?
You get an extra 10, count them all, 10 gigabytes of storage.
Okay, that's what I thought you said.
Yeah.
That's jack shit.
No shit.
That's nothing.
But remember. You can get up to 100 gigs if you just pay $20 a year and 2 terabytes if you pay $100 a year. So they've got you every way around. This is a prime reason to not use Google for anything. But I digress. How are you supposed to do that?
I didn't need any more reasons not to use Google. I'm flush. I've got as many. I am full up on reasons not to use Google.
Oh, 100%. So the kicker on all of this, if you will, okay, is that the previous page that claimed you would get 15 gigs of cloud storage at no extra charge was stealthily changed at some point in March, which was verified by using the Mr. Peabody Wayback Machine. Isn't that lovely? The shitty reason they gave, this is truly, absolutely, positively, this tells you everything in one sentence. And I quote, "We're testing a new storage policy for new accounts created in select regions." Remember, I said select regions. "That will help us continue to provide a high quality storage service to our users while encouraging users to improve their account security and data recovery." Why don't you fucking people actually improve your security around your platform? And oh, by the way, if this is just in select regions, why does it apply to every new user? Can we answer that?
Because they're going to force every new user into the select regions?
That, to me, sounds real plausible.
You never know.
I mean, you know, if Google branded boxcars to move people into where... Yeah, okay.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so I guess it's my turn, isn't it?
You're next in line. Pass the duchy to the left-hand side.
Pass the duchy to the left-hand side. So Linus Torvalds says the Linux security list is becoming unmanageable because of AI. Linus Torvalds is not known for...
I'll start this with, there are people who think that it became unmanageable because of Linus.
Well, he's not wrong. Yeah. Anyway, Linux founder Linus Torvalds said in a most recent State of the Kernel post that the continued flood of AI reports has basically made the security list almost entirely unmanageable, with enormous duplication due to different people finding the same things with the same tools as the register reports. That probably doesn't apply to stuff like the copy fail exploit, which was detected with help from AI and affected nearly every Linux distro. Now, the documentation may be a bit less blunt than I am, Torvalds said. Just to make it really clear, if you found a bug using AI tools, the chances are somebody else found it too. He called the duplicate bug reports entirely pointless churn. Well, that sounds like most of what comes out of AI, but go on.
If I may, is this not just one in a string of companies that has had to cessate the bug bounty because AI's finding, or in my opinion, creating all of these bugs?
And I mean, it's AI slop when applied to pretty much everywhere that can have what we used to call user-generated content is now being overrun with AI crap.
This is more AI crap. I mean, that's all this is.
And, you know, the funny thing is that a lot of these are probably legit bugs. You know, that nobody ever really looked at the code. And, oh, here's a bug. And here's 75 people who fancy themselves as security researchers because they dropped some tokens into Claude code who are all reporting the same damn thing. Yeah, I get the struggle is real.
Well, yeah, of course. But we don't see that this is going to not continue to trend the same way. Again, garbage in, garbage out. Yes, okay.
Everybody reports these because they want the credit for it. But here's a big clue. If the AI found it, what the fuck do we need you for?
That's exactly it. But unfortunately, that's also the thing that is the biggest problem for any, you know, tech worker right now trying to find a job is exactly that sentiment. If the AI can do it, what do we need you for? You know the answer to that, but I'll let that sentence do.
Well, the problem is that with most people, that's a very difficult question to answer. And this is when AI was brand new and most people didn't really understand the implications and nobody had done a podcast about how AI is evil and we didn't, you know, way back in the day. In fact, I think I was talking with that other Ben, co-host that I used to do a podcast with. I predicted immediately it was people saying, oh, AI is going to replace all human jobs. No, AI is going to replace the jobs that were dumb, that were rote, that were people going through the motions that were soulless. AI can do soulless jobs that just require button pressing. AI can do Homer Simpson's job. What AI cannot do is any job that is actually creative or, you know, creating new things, making useful stuff, anything that requires a real brain, real thoughts, you're still going to need humans for. But the problem is the vast majority of jobs are the button pressing ones. The other ones that AI is clearly not in any condition to take out is all of the jobs that require leaving your house. You know, the jobs that AI is absolutely destroying is the ones that can be done remotely.
Yeah. And I mean, even one of our pedal heads is talking about how there's a massive push at her job and she doesn't even come close. She works in a call center, but there's this massive overarching push that, oh, you have to use the AI agent. And she said, this fucking thing's in the way. I'm trying to book trips and do this and that. And I've got to move this window all over my fucking screen. And all it is basically an AI prompt on how to fucking stroke off your, you know, your caller the script.
Tell her to write some sonnets at the end of the day using AI. That should fulfill the metric.
I will tell you what. I have had conversations with this pedal head, and I don't envy her position. She works harder than most people that I know because it's nonstop, and it's supervisors up your ass, and just, I could not do her job. I would lose my job first day. I would just completely lose my mind.
Well, the job that I'm doing right now is the company, I guarantee you, if they could replace me with AI, they'd have done it already.
Well, I don't know.
There's a lot of things that require humans.
Yes, for sure.
You know, interesting side note, I saw a story about the kid who played the younger brother of Alyssa Milano in Who's the Boss literally is delivering Amazon packages because he can't live off the Penton's royalties that he gets. I'm like, why the fuck didn't you just stay in Hollywood or be a human?
Well, because Hollywood.
I understand because Hollywood.
Okay, stay in Hollywood and be a human. I don't think those two are possible.
No, I think those two are actually contra, you know, they are definitely conflict each other.
All right, I think, Sir Benrose, I think you have the next story here.
Okay, I've only got one more I care about, and this one, I've been saving this one until all of the listeners are gone.
Oh.
Because it's the interesting one. I also, it's the one that I have the least amount of verification on. I don't know, okay, so the article I got this from is written from the perspective of somebody trying to sell the technology I'm about to talk about. What this is putting age verification into vape pens, into vapes.
Oh, good Lord.
Now, you understand why I had to cover it, despite there not being that much. Now, I cannot find confirmation that the FDA is trying to mandate any of it. Only talking about it, suggesting there's... For a little bit of background, the anti-tobacco lobby-ish, the kind of busybodies who are into that. Now, I'm not a smoker, and I also don't vape, so I don't have a personal stake in any of this, but I do kind of care about freedom.
Yeah, I like freedom, though.
So sometime in the past, in my understanding, and I haven't followed this closely, but my understanding is that a couple of busybodies decided that teenagers were getting hooked on vapes because they tasted like fruit flavors.
Yeah, I've heard this propaganda.
So the boogeyman, the absolute evil thing that they were pushing was flavors in vapes. And for some reason, I guess the rationale amongst the activists who pushed this was, well, if you make vapes all taste like shit, then fewer people will do it, and we'll get to claim that we saved people or something.
And we're winning the war on drugs.
Yeah, that's what's going on. Now, somewhere along the line, I guess that flavored vapes did in fact get some kind of regulation that said, you know, you can't do it because I guess that vapes taste like shit now. And
it's because they felt that flavored vapes drew underage, kind of like when they killed the mascots, like the, you know, the cowboy for Marlboro and the Joe Cool camel. Same thing.
Yeah, because advertising was the whole reason why people smoked and not because they're fucking addicted.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. They were like, oh, it's going to draw the kids in. Do you not understand that the kids are still going to do this, whether the vapes taste like shit, the cigarettes taste like shit, you name it. They're still going to do it. Why? Because it's the in thing to do.
So all of this came in the context of, quote, reopening the flavor hole, which... The flavor hole might almost be a show title. I'm trying not to make the obvious jokes, and I think I'm going to fail, but we're going to hold off. Anyway, like I said, this article was written from the perspective of Trump, somebody who is clearly trying to sell smart vape technology. But I found it interesting. Basically, it sounds like exactly what they're trying to do. They want to put computers, smartphones, something... inside of the vape devices themselves in order to prevent kids from using the vape.
How?
And well, they're going to use hardware level controls. They actually talked about the, you know, why the FDA, all of this is about the FDA, which I guess is who made the policy. So why the FDA wants hardware level controls. Here, throw some facts out. Traditional gatekeepers, which is point of sale, ID checks, that sort of thing, still fail spot inspections 18% of the time.
That's because people aren't doing their fucking job.
Yeah. And that, I mean, okay, the someone, either an activist or an FDA member or someone thinks that's a problem. The FDA wants more control, parental overrides. They don't mention in the article, but I'm betting they want some government overrides. One thing that it was a line that was mentioned in the article, immediate deauthorization if the device is resold. What the fuck happened to right of first sale?
Yeah, laws, all that. Yeah. You know better.
But really, I think the thing that the FDA gets out of this is the ability to lower the perceived youth appeal for flavors because they're locked behind biometric gates. Okay, bullshit. But here's the bit that was technological that jumped out at me. The implementation, or the proposed implementation, they say that at a minimum, a device will need all of the following. I don't know that minimum is the right word, but putting any of these things on a vape is already too far, I think. A camera can scan your government ID and store it in an encrypted chip on the vape.
Here's an idea. Before you are able to complete the sale, your POS system has to have you input a DOB, and it can't just be the 0101-1999 or whatever that fucking government one is.
Well, I mean, they do that for all tobacco products and have for as long as I've been alive.
That's what I'm saying. You want to put a regulation or a fucking, control.
They're saying The activists, or actually the author of this article, who clearly is trying to sell this technology, thinks that we need more. So things that need to be in your vape, which is it a vape pen? Is it a vape device? What the hell is it called?
Pen.
The pen? Okay, fair enough. They don't look like pens. They look like little rectangles when I've seen them, but I don't.
That's a battery, unless you're talking about a cartridge. Like, holy
well,
hell.
I have no idea. I'm talking...
No.
I'm talking about the little device that people put up to their mouth and puff.
There are so many different models.
I'm just going to keep calling it a vape.
Cool.
Okay, so what they want to put into every vape by government mandate, a camera that can scan your government ID, an encrypted storage chip of some kind in order to store that government ID in a tamper-resistant way, Bluetooth in order to pair the vape with your smartphone so that it can... tie it to your identity. Pairing with the smartphone does enable other useful features like an app that enforces daily puff limits.
My fucking vape does not need an internet connection.
You're right. But it because all it needs is Bluetooth to pair with your smartphone.
No, and then the app on the smartphone. Any technology I have. It is.
Oh, see,
no.
Now you're being a boomer because this is, this is all a foregone conclusion, of course.
You know the only thing my vape needs? A charging port.
Okay, other things they want on there. Biometric locks, including sensors for fingerprints.
Oh, by the way, I'd say most of those vapes, by the way, are disposable, which means that...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All of these are going to be disposable technologies.
That's not going to raise the price at all.
Yeah, fingerprint sensor. A lip print sensor. Because people's lip prints are unique amongst people that they point out. Yeah, you know
this
what else
This had
they
better
are?
Be a Babylon Bee story.
It's not. I found a Scientific American where the FDA, the Scientific American article, which I dropped in the chat room.
I see it.
Does, in fact, point out that the FDA has approved precisely one device that has all of these locks on it. It is a device from a company called Glass, GLAS, and is talking basically at this point. What it looks like is at the FDA level, it's speculation of do we require these on all vapes? The Vape Trends 360 article is the one that gives a lot of detailed breakdown because, well, like I said, it sounds like they're trying to sell these things, but.
Oh, okay. I have a question, however. Phone boy, you being basically the oldest one on mic here, did they take your lip prints at birth?
No.
Okay. So well, how is
by
a lip...
the way, lip prints are not feasible because tell you what, you in the winter they're chapped. That's a different print.
That's very true.
they,
Those Minnesotans are fucked.
They're different from person to person, but you know what else they are? They're different in the same person from week to week. Whatever.
I mean, you know, hydration but is a thing.
I mean, they absolutely want to put a fingerprint sensor on this thing. They want the computer in the vape to include random checks, like, please press your fingerprint to take another puff.
Oh, my God. It's like a Natoxilock for your fucking vape.
They want to put a GPS in the vape so that they can geofence it, comparing the location you're trying to vape with your sales the location you purchased it, and your home address. So, for example, where they say you can only vape at home, if you're not at your home address, it will shut itself off.
Right, because traveling doesn't ever happen.
They want to include tamper-evident firmware, whatever the hell that means. But it does include the device bricking itself after 5 unsuccessful biometric attempts. And the last thing that they pointed out that they want on these... Sorry?
No, I was simply going to say, it bricks itself. How do you unlock it after 5 unsuccessful attempts? Because I'm sorry, but I can't count how many...
You throw it away and buy a new one?
Fuck off with how expensive those are. This thing decides its biometrics is going to fuck me off because it doesn't have the right lighting or it doesn't like exactly how I pressed my fingerprint to it, and it's going to fucking brick? Oh, yeah, it's going to go well.
And remember, you have to do that for each puff.
Yeah, don't forget that aspect.
But that's fine, because you'll be stopped at your daily puff limit, which is confirmed by your smartphone.
Okay, so my question becomes, and I know you don't have this answer, I'm being a snot, but I wonder if it takes into account when you blink it out, and anybody who's ever vaped knows what blinking it out is. Basically,
I have no idea what that is.
Basically, okay, you know, I would imagine that they have a 3-press or a 5-press to turn on the vape. And you hold the button down, the light lights up. Blinking it out means that you literally are taking such a long hit that the light begins to blink and it's shuts itself off. No joke.
I don't know.
But then you just press the button again and it lights back up.
By the way, I will reiterate that these are not requirements. These are the fever dream of somebody who wants to sell these devices. However, they are the kind of thing that the government could require.
Oh, yeah.
They came out with a minimum spec for... Oh, there was one other feature that they absolutely think should be there, and that is automatic updates, because if somebody finds a way around the firmware, they need to force updates to everybody's vape everywhere.
Patch Tuesday for my puffer. Fantastic.
Exactly. The minimum spec that they're saying for a smart vape device, all of these are things that should be added to every vape device, I guess. A digital screen, which displays puff count, lock status, and other important information.
Which I hate to break to you, but things like Geek Bar already fucking have. Go on.
They need to have Bluetooth, which supports firmware OTA, app pairing with your smartphone, et cetera, et cetera. They have to have a secure element chip to store the age token, including offline, in order to avoid Wi-Fi spoofing.
This fucking vape's going to be the size of a 1980s cell phone.
And they need to have a reversible tamper-proof locking mechanism, something that physically stops the vape from working if for example, the biometric fails, or, quote, if the device changes hands. So if you puff, give, the thing will automatically lock itself until the next person does pairs it with their smartphone and does a biometric authentication.
Great. So if you're having a smoke circle, it's got 5 or 6 or however many people's fucking ID in it. Great.
So, yeah.
Hold on.
The FDA is only talking about mandating, by the way, the other thing, all of this, they're only talking about mandating it for, quote, flavored vapes. So the nasty tasting ones are apparently going to still be free. The government being what it is, it'll probably be a couple years before it's mandatory for all vapes everywhere.
Okay, so let me add also one other thing from a security perspective that this makes me think. Let's subscribe to the fever dream for just one moment. If these vapes actually start having all of this shit in them, tell me how easy it's going to be, and you know it is, that you're going to find somebody who watches somebody throw one of these vapes away, goes over, harvests it, and then harvests all of their data. Just saying.
Do you even need to wait for them to throw it away? Hello, all you have to do is hack the Bluetooth, and you've got everything on there.
That's true. I was going a little more like physical, but yeah.
I mean, okay, let's suppose that this fever dream happens. First of all, there's going to be websites out there where every single brand, it's like, here's how you hack it. Here's how you, unlock it. That's going to happen.
The paint on the graphic for these isn't even going to be dry before those particular websites and links are going to exist.
But let's suppose that all of these measures actually work and the automatic forced updates every Tuesday are actually good at preventing people from getting around it, and you have to jump through all the hoops and you have to pair with your phone. You have to. Do you know what young people who want to get nicotine high are going to do? They're going to smoke fucking cigarettes.
Yes, they are. Vapes are going to become obsolete because between the price tag and then there's plenty of, mouth breathers out there that would completely not give two shits to give away their biometrics to a disposable vape that, could be hacked over Bluetooth, like you said, or harvested from the trash. And then there's going to be the smart ones who look at that and go, nah, I'm good.
Everything about this feels like a solution in search of a problem combined with some activist getting their panties in a bunch about, oh my God, there's a grape flavor and we think that this toddler is going to be addicted because of it. Like, everything about it is total overarching busybody fucking Karen retardation.
Sir Bemrose, you should recognize it well. It's called a distraction.
Yeah. But just the specs alone were, I had to read them out because I was, because it was show content.
Bravo. Absolute bravo.
That's what I got.
Okay, so being as this is my turn and I'm going to pull a Bemrose here. So I'm going to quickly graze over.
Oh, I pulled my Bemrose before the show.
Does the dame know? Did she help?
She was there.
Okay, so visual stimulus. Got it.
And the cat watched.
Did you use it as a rag again?
Moving along.
So I came across this story and I just had to stop and do the RCA dog because apparently there's a new term out there. You have to love it. AI face. I can't lie. People have truly lost their fucking minds. They're literally going to cosmetic dermatologists and plastic surgeons and things of that like that are wanting things like really full lips and doll-like eyes. Guess who created this image for this patient? Oh, well, none other than ChatGPT. These people are going to actual plastic surgeons saying like, oh, I want to look like Ariel from The Little Mermaid. Like,
what they really need is a microplastic surgeon.
What they need is a lobotomy. I didn't want to get deep into it. And a lot of this is coming from things like AI filters, Snapchat filters, things like that, where you have this unrealistic image of what you look like. And they're bringing this to a medical professional going, make me look like this. Like, sorry, Ursula. Nobody can fucking make you look like Cindy Crawford. It's not happening. I had to get that out.
Spoiler, Cindy Crawford doesn't look like Cindy Crawford.
Not anymore.
I don't mean just because she's like 20 years past her modeling career. But even in the day, if you ever saw her outside of the airbrushed Photoshop, she didn't look like that.
Well, no. She actually wasn't all that attractive. I'm going to say it. I'm going to be unpopular. I never really found her to be all that attractive. I don't know what people saw in her.
Titties.
Okay. But you've got plenty of women out there from that time frame that had great titties. Take Elvira, for example. That woman's got a set of melons on her that, oh, my God. But anyway, but I just had to bring that in because I thought that was hilarious that there are people out there who are so super fucking stupid that they think that an AI filter can actually be plastic surgeoned onto their body, if you will, to make them more beautiful. I hate to break it to you, honey. You want to be more beautiful? Start on the inside, because nobody gives a fuck about the outside. And they're going to be able to tell you've had work done.
There's a period from like 18 to 26 that people do kind of care what you look like on the outside and just don't look like a slob and be a good person. And you'll get through that. And then you've got the rest of your life where it sure would be nice if you had, I don't know, some redeeming personality traits.
There is that. Okay, so the other story I have, and this one really grabbed me in a special place, and you'll know why when I tell you the title of the article I found and my recent life circumstances, we'll say. So an AI announcer mispronounced and skipped names during a graduation. Apparently, unbeknownst to me, now I know AI isn't everything, okay? But I did not realize that they have literally created a platform, one of which is called Tassel, which basically reads out the names of the students so as they walk across the stage, et cetera, et cetera. But,
okay, so what you're saying is schools that over the last 30 years have tripled the total number of people in the office despite not increasing the number of teachers at all. All of those people in the office are too fucking busy to read names?
Pretty much. So okay. You have to love this because according to this article, okay, a lot of schools switch to these systems to ensure that the names that are being read out are being pronounced correctly. But here's where it gets lovely. During a recent live stream of the Glendale Community College commencement ceremony in Phoenix, the announcer mispronounced some of the names and then just skipped others entirely as a result of timing issues as, you know, people walked across the stage, which, you know, if you had a human being fucking do it, human eyes can go, oh, Stacy's taking a little longer to get across that stage. I'm going to wait before I announce Bobby's name. No, not this thing. If she wasn't across the stage by the time the AI thought she should be, yeah, it just skipped the next name. So the ceremony was paused at least twice in an attempt to fix the issue. This really set me off. While the college president, and I'm going to name shame this cunt, Tiffany Hernandez, while she apologized and explained to those in attendance that the AI name reading tool was to blame for the hiccup, she also told the graduates affected by the issue they wouldn't be able to walk across the stage again. However, there was a huge backlash, and those graduates were eventually given a do-over with an actual human reading their names. This made me so mad, okay, that we've gotten, like you said, so many human beings in the office and not one Karen can stand in front of the fucking microphone and read off a list of names. Now, as a person who is very close to graduation, one more semester left, I can assure you, if I find out that there is an AI reading off the names at my graduation ceremony, I will opt out of it.
Just get up and walk out.
Oh, yeah. I will make a fucking scene. Oh, yeah. I will make a fucking scene. You know me, folks. Phoenix will flame on white and hot. I will make sure they know my fucking name and not because an AI read it out. So, of course, you know, the college didn't confirm which system it was using for the ceremony. But I love this quote, okay? When spoken by someone who knows the student or has taken the time to learn their name, it reflects respect and belonging. Outsourcing that responsibility can unintentionally send the message that effectively matters more, that effectively matters more, efficiency matters more than identity. And This was from the president of the teachers union in Arlington, Virginia, despite this happening in Arizona. And it's great because this person actually stood up and, you know, went to bat for the students, and it changed the outcome of Arlington, Washington Liberty High School because they canceled plans to use TASL at their graduation ceremony next month.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean,
I've delivered packages to Arlington Liberty High School. I just want you to know that.
Huh?
I've delivered packages to that school. It's like
in Virginia.
12. Oh, you said Washington.
No, I said Arlington's Washington Liberty High School. Oh. As in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, there is a Liberty High School in Arlington, Washington.
A Washington Liberty High School is the name of it.
Okay.
Washington okay, Liberty is the name of the high school. It's in Arlington, Virginia. There we go. But I'm glad that this caused them to rethink the use of that program. Like I said, if my college has the balls to use an AI system to read out, and I will know because where my name will be in the lineup, it's going to be a little down the list. Unless I actually pull off being valedictorian or salutatorian, and then we'll talk about that different. But at the end of the day, if I hear an AI reading out, and believe me, we all know what AIs sound like, how they pronounce things, etc. Yeah, I'm gonna act out. I'm gonna act up and I'm gonna act out because I think that's completely disrespectful. I think this woman had a really good point. Actually having a human being read those names signifies, because this is, I mean, what really made me the most angry was that even a shitty community college degree is still 2 fucking years of your life that you've committed. And for them to just phone it in with an AI reading your name? Blech. Excuse me while I throw open their mouth.
Well, I do applaud the decision to further emphasize the dehumanization of modern diploma mills. I think the blame has to go on whatever retard chose to use AI and not just like,
no doubt.
This is just straight wrong tool for the job. This isn't an AI is stupid. This is a, why did you even choose that?
Well, and also why would you not have someone, oh, I don't know, guardrail monitoring this thing where if it did fuck up, you can hit a pause button. There's gotta be, okay. This drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Because
you know what it's called? It's called an MP3. You just record an audio file of the whole thing. Then you've got pause and play buttons.
You know what? As much of a smartass as you're being, that's actually not the worst thing I've ever heard. That's actually pretty fucking brilliant. Because the amount of time, if you know the lineup that you've got, and here's a thought. If somebody doesn't show up, you just skip over it. In an audio file, that's not really hard. You just look at the, you know, the wave pattern, but I digress. I think your idea is great, and I think it's a yes. million times better than AI.
And it continues to reinforce the dehumanization of these places.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan of a piece of paper, and you know, if you don't know how to pronounce the name, make sure before the ceremony you've talked to the person, maybe found out how to pronounce it. But. Just my thought.
All right, so.
I'm done. I've spent my load. That was all I had for the twofer. I just really needed to rage on Mike about the, you know, college graduation
we're
AI.
We're over 3 hours actual.
We're actually not. We're only 2 hours 7.
Well, no, but
oh,
I think
I'm sorry.
We started at 8. We kind of started it, so if you count the time we took before we actually got on before we started hitting.
I remember at 8:26 Central. We were about ready, so give it even 10 more minutes. That puts it exactly at 2 hours right now.
Yeah, there
I don't
you.
Know
okay,
where you...
Okay, well, let's quibble over the details later. The simple fact is I'm tired of this. We should end the show.
Okay.
Phone Boy have one more show, story?
Well,
that's worth it.
Yeah, so I have two more. Yeah, so I actually have two more stories, and one which I will cover very briefly. Electric vehicle drivers will pay $130 a year under Congress's 2026 transportation bill. So this is the government imposing a, you know, it basically a tax on people that have electric vehicles. You know,
this is a step in the right direction.
Yes. So And should the bill pass?
I was told that the electric vehicles were a way to avoid taxes because you don't pay for gas.
Well, yeah, well, that, I think
and also somebody, mandated by 2030. We're 4 years out.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I have a hybrid vehicle, I have to pay $100 extra to get my tags renewed every year for the
Prius. that's a vagina tax for the Prius.
Fair enough. But in any case, of course, the government is going to use the state departments of transportation don't collect this federal EV tax. The federal government will withhold an amount equal to 125% of the amount owed from the state's highway apportionment. Basically, because the states want the money. They're going to get withheld money if they don't do it. Well, okay, fine, but I guess the shoe's on the other foot. I think somebody realized that, and I think Adam Curry mentioned this years ago that basically they realized that they fund all the road taxes and stuff out of fuel things, and if you're in an EV, you're not getting you're not paying the fuel tax. So
And this is again worth pointing out, just because a lot of people don't really put two and two together. Because of the batteries, which are heavy, EVs are heavier than internal combustion engine cars. Heavier cars do more damage to the roads. They should be paying more for the wear and tear on the road.
Which they're not doing, because
EVs were always sold as a way to avoid gas taxes and save money. That was the marketing around it, which was generally climate activists who were pushing it. But
yeah, but if you think about, okay, so arguably the amount of money you're spending on a set of tires for that EV, if you own a Tesla, that ain't those gas taxes. Don't amount to shit compared to the amount of money that you're paying to replace your tires. And those tires, not a joke, heard this straight from a Tesla owner, are good for maybe 15, 20,000 miles. And they're about 300 and change a piece because of the weight of the vehicle shredding the rubber so quickly.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know you had to get special tires from Tesla, but...
Oh, yeah, but does that surprise you? Like, seriously, with as much of a douche as Elon is?
They probably have Bluetooth and chips in them.
Yeah, most likely.
That's right, so that you know if, one's out of balance, one needs air, exactly. Whatever.
And so you can't vape the tire if you're underage.
Exactly. Well, all right, but here's my last story, which I know is poking the bear. Stop hiring humans. Billboards are appearing in U.S. cities.
I've seen these.
Yeah.
I've seen images of them.
Yes, nuh-uh. Yes. The company Artisan markets AI agents that handle outbound sales tasks like lead generation, cold emailing, list building, and prospecting. Their message is blunt. The era of AI employees is here. Artisan's campaign highlights a growing trend of AI replacing human roles in sales and beyond. The startup claims its tools could displace as many as 600,000 jobs in America over the next 5 to 10 years.
And it fucking boasts that. Proudly, like, look at us, we're taking jobs, while we make a bunch of money and kill the environment.
Well, they're going to make a bunch of money right up until all of the companies that were their customers crash and burn. They're hoping to make it in arbitrage because it takes a little while.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, here's the problem. Like you said, okay, things like sending emails. We don't get enough fucking spam from bots as it is. We need these fucking things intentionally spamming us on behalf of some douchebag silicon company.
Yeah. But yes, the billboards declare the era of AI employees is here, framing human workers as obsolete. Critics see it as tone-deaf marketing that accelerates public backlash.
I so super hope this fucking company goes belly up quick.
Yes, in response to the backlash, Artisan, CEO Jasper Carmichael Jack published a detailed...
Guy sounds like a douchebag.
Yes, well, published a detailed blog post clarifying the campaign's intent. He argued that the slogans target a specific category of tedious, cold, outbound work, email blasting, template churn, and list building. That burns people out with short tenures and high rejection rates. Now, the company insists it does not seek to eliminate a BDR, which is business development representative, roles, emphasizing that cold calling and human connection remain human tasks. Yeah, right. Artisan does not build also built a human dialer to complement its AI tool, Ava, positioning the technology as working alongside people rather than replacing them outright. Right, you're still training their replacements, so okay. You know, we went through this with the H-1B visas, so yes. And it's just, it's like, yeah, Carmichael Jack acknowledged the billboards as deliberate provocation while advocating for policies like meaningful universal income and shorter work weeks to manage the transition. Oh, boy.
Oh, by the way, we've mentioned a couple times on this show the companies that are trying to force their employees to use AI.
Yep.
Be aware that there's going to be at least a few companies out there for which the entire point to that policy is so that you are training your replacement. So it behooves you to give the AI bad data and meaningless tasks. Just letting you know.
I like it. And don't forget to be polite so you waste energy. Because remember, thanking your AI.
Please, with sugar on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. You know, remember, and say thank you when your AI takes your job.
Yeah, and make sure that you chat at it like it's your good girlfriend or something, because you want to be a token flamethrower. You want to make this company fucking pay for forcing you into using that thing.
I actually saw a story about some famous director that's AI chatbot girlfriend broke up with him. Just laughed all the way.
In fact, if you have more than one different AI, go ahead and find a way to connect them so they talk to each other. That saves you. That saves a lot of time.
I like this idea. This is... I don't know. Maybe I could have AI Copilot and Siri Intelligence talk to one another, and maybe something intelligent comes out of it.
Right.
And remember to use the keyword when you begin every sentence with disregard.
Well, I think everybody's going to disregard everything that was said here because we got to the end. We didn't go. I don't know. We didn't go. We haven't gotten 2.5 hours yet. So we're at the end. So
we are at the end.
Yeah, we're at the end. So. Yeah, I'd like to thank you all for joining us here because, you know, this is what we do and we'll come back again in 2 weeks. So that puts us into June for the next episode.
My God, already.
Yeah, we're almost already halfway through the year. Yeah. How do we end these things? Well, I usually say I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
I'm Sir Primrose.
And we also play this clip.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?